My name is Gina Ferris, and I welcome you to our podcast, Let's Not Be Bystanders, where we explore my work and journey for 30 years in Haiti, living life and establishing two successful NGOs. Every episode will share my understanding on how to run a successful NGO, exploring the realities of social injustice that inhibits Haiti as a nation to advance. We will explore my work at FEJ, and I will provide guidance to those who have interest and are seeking to understand Haiti, sharing every episode an experience of hope and how to build a legacy of love and unity.
Hi, my name is Rachel, and I'll be your facilitator for today's episode of Let's Not Be Bystanders podcast, where we'll be focusing on the health programs of Fondation Enfant Jesus with Gina Ferris, the president and CEO of Fondation Enfant Jesus. Gina, could you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Rachel. Hi, my name is Gina Ferris. I'm the CEO, co-founder of Fondation Enfant Jesus, FEJ.
So could you please tell us how the healthcare program fits into the FEJ mission?
Absolutely. Of course, I like to also remind everyone always that our mission is mostly focused on child protection and family preservation. We created the community clinic at La Modelle to accompany the school that we created. We wanted to make sure that the children had a regular medical checkup. Because we had realized that many of the children in school either were severely anemic or had some form of malnutrition. So in detecting that in the kids in school and asking the community, well, what's next? What would you like to see us develop next? And of course, they said, we need a community clinic. And this is how we started the clinic, which primary mission was to provide primary care to the inhabitants of La Modelle, where there is about approximately 20,000 people, as well as the oversight and treatment of HIV, TB, and severely malnourished children in the community. Since we had already addressed the malnutrition situation in our kids in the school, now we were ready to extend it to other kids that were not able to attend our school but lived in the community.
So I know you have four locations. Can you tell us a bit more about the four facilities and what's particular about each of them?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Well, in La Modelle, which is where our main mission started, where we did build a school, and then we initiated a community clinic for the community. And we also, at the time, early years in around 2000 until the earthquake, we also had a creche, a 14 square state-of-the-art creche that could easily receive 150 children, which we decided to close in 2010. Because at that point we had two orphanages, one in La Modelle for all children, and then another one in Keskov, which is specialized for kids with HIV. And then we also have our main office in Delma 19, where we have our main office and then two other stories where we are able to provide intensive treatment care for kids with HIV and severe malnutrition, and also be able to house families, because our kids come from all over the country, as well as we have also a training center on the main floor where in one day we hope to be able to provide telemedicine. And we also had partnered about 2 years ago with a small grassroots organization that is in the south, in a little community called Dumont, where we have this organization called Rêve Anaïka, which supports 150 families in their family context. And we've been mostly providing them with in-kind donations. And of course, the last earthquake last August, we provided them with tremendous amount of emergency support to those families.
And so what type of services are provided in the clinic of La Modelle?
Well, we provide, first of all, we do a lot of education, especially since we have a lot of patients with diabetes and high blood pressure. a lot of anemia. And we have had a few TB and also HIV cases that we refer to other organizations. And we also provide a lab. We have a lab. We have a pharmacy. And we also have a whole floor for training of people in the community. We do a lot of focus group on special health issues or particular issues that we feel need to be addressed in a preventive manner.
Mm-hmm. And so could you tell us how many people are employed at the clinic, and also how do you finance the services that are provided there?
Actually, now we have 19 employees. We've got a few midwives, licensed midwives, two doctors, lab technician, a pharmacist, and then we have nurses, of course, and we also have health agents. Mm-hmm.
And so how do you finance the services that are provided?
Well, we've been very fortunate to have a very amazing partnership with a pharmaceutical company that is located in Germany. They're called Action Meteor, and they've been our main support system for that clinic for the last 9 years, as well as we've done a few fundraisers. Yeah, we've done fundraisers focusing, we did a few golf tournaments in the past that has also supported our kids in the malnutrition program for the clinic. And we do ask a symbolic 100 goods for all the services we provide, just to, let's say, register you and get you a file started in the clinic. Mm-hmm.
And so Haiti has the highest maternal mortality rate, about 650 deaths per 100,000 live births, compared to 99 deaths per 100,000 live births for the rest of the Caribbean. So how does the FEJ Maternity Project tackle this highly alarming problem?
Well, that was one of the reasons that we wanted to have the community asked for that clinic. You need to know that Haiti has a tradition of traditional midwives, and many of these traditional midwives, have no education. They've learned from generation to generation. And this has been a factor that, you know, we've looked at some of the statistics that have been put out by the Minister of Health in Haiti. And it's obvious that because these traditional midwives do not have certain training, we have had many kids that are born with either disabilities, hydrocephalic, because the monitoring of the midwives are not medically scientific, we can say, but in order to not lose their livelihood, what we did is we incorporated them into the system, and today they are a great support to the mothers throughout their pregnancy. We added prenatal, postnatal care 3 years after, and have been delivering kids in the clinics ever since. I think now, last month, we had almost 80 kids born in that clinic. We've really made a lot of progress in that sense. And it allows us to catch the problem from conception. Because one of the things we realize is that a lot of the kids that are born with malnutrition, it's because they were already malnourished in their mother's wombs, because the mothers were malnourished. So the little that is she has, she was giving to that child growing in herself. So we really needed to reverse that and start making sure the mothers were taking good care of themselves, not in malnourished, so they could have healthier babies. And in having the traditional midwives accompanying them in all the training we do and following them from the start of conception until making sure also the kids get their vaccinations. That's another thing that the clinic is very providing, making sure that the kids in the community get all the necessary vaccinations that are required to have a healthy life. And I can say that in doing this transformation of the traditional midwives into supporters, our long-term goal is to transform them into family planning agents. We then recently, in the after 6 years of operations, we added women and young girl health, because there's a lot of mothers and women out in Haiti that we're seeing more and more uterine cancer, breast cancer, that are not being monitored. So we wanted to incorporate that into the clinic's mission. So we do a lot of prevention and early detection of breast cancer, uterine cancer. And we also are trying more and more, because one of the things that were alarming to me when we started the clinic, how young the mothers were. We're getting mothers that are 14 years old giving birth in our clinic. And we thought it was important to address young girls' issues and the things they confront. And we do a lot of prevention and education as well in those areas in the clinic.
So could you speak a bit more to why it's important to establish an ongoing relationship with the network of local midwives in that area?
Well, like I told you, that our intention was not to remove, even though the Minister of Health no longer recognizes them to do what they do. You know, they are more and more enforcing us getting licensed midwives trained. In there is also the School of Midwife in Port-au-Prince, which was created by a Canadian entity. So today the movement is trying to get more and more midwives that are licensed going through the medical training. But unfortunately, a lot of the midwives, they learned this from generation on, passed on. And so not to lose their livelihood, we have done a lot of training. Initially, we didn't have licensed midwives, so we were still counting on them and delivering those kids, but differently. So we kind of provide them with training, made sure they had sanitized kits, and not using the same scissor to cut the umbilical cords to, you know, prevent infection and septicemia of mothers. So we slowly, progressively have taken away that process from them of delivering the babies, and now they're more and more monitoring the moms in terms of their nutritional status through their pregnancy, and being more of a support. And we encourage each traditional midwife to accompany the mothers when they're ready to give birth as a support system. You have to know many of the mothers are uniparenting, they're single women, so often they are left alone to deal with that.
So one of the programs within the healthcare program of FUJ is the intensive treatment unit. Can you tell us about the history of that program?
I love to say that's my last mission for Haiti, the intensive treatment unit, which is in our main building, main office in Del Mar. It's an interesting story on how when you're meant to do something and how it happens and it just falls into place. Right after the earthquake, our main office was destroyed. We had our first floor was our administrative and multiple discipline teams. And because of our orphanage, when we created the orphanage, we get the sickest kids. And when they would come, we often would have to hospitalize them to stabilize them before we admit them into the orphanage. And it was costly. Each child would cost me about $10,000 Haitian. Because I would have to provide the nurse, the nanny, the pediatrician, the oxygen, the medication. So it was like, I was renting a bed in a hospital. And it was not sustainable for our orphanage program. So that's when we decided that we would take that second floor and transform it into a little miniature hospital where we would have 24-hour nursing care, able to get lab works done immediately, and have a pediatrician following the sick kids on a daily basis in our little medical unit, which was destroyed. We actually lost two children, which I can never forget, because of the earthquake. We had these two kids in incubators and the building just collapsed. So those kids also we lost. But I have to tell you that life is funny. I was so busy during the 2010 earthquake that evacuating kids and caring for so many in the community. And everybody kept telling me, you have to go after Clinton Bush money and all the money out there. But to tell the truth, I just was too busy, hands on. And funny enough, there was an organization that was part of the Clinton Foundation initiatives. And apparently they were giving a lot of money for after the earthquake. You know, the CEO, which is become a dear friend, a man I have tremendous respect for, Rick Federzi, who was the CEO of US Grid Building at the time, had decided that he wanted to rebuild an orphanage that was destroyed. And we were chosen. They came to find us. And immediately after that, they nominated in US Grid Building, had a project manager, and they call it Project Haiti. And I developed a very nice relationship with US Green Building because it took 7 years to build that building. And I have to say, they got me involved in every aspect of the building. It's a very high tech, it's a self-sustained, sustainable building. We're off the grid. It's LEED Platinum, wellness certified. That's, you know, very unique. Often I've been told that when we were building, this is going to be the first one in the Caribbean. I'm sure today there are others, but we are the only one in Haiti that has a wellness and LEED Platinum certification, which means that building can endure an earthquake as far as high as 7.5 and resists to hurricane. And so it's a very safe place. And this is where we have our intensive treatment unit, as well as our main office and our educational center.
So we know that HIV positive children are often stigmatized in society. So how do you enforce quality treatment for those kids?
Well, I have to tell you one of the things that it's when we opened that unit 2 years ago, and today we're getting kids that are living in the community with their families that are HIV. Of course, we get some abandoned kids as well as severely malnourished kids. And it's, I was eagerly surprised to learn that there are many kids that are 10, 12, 13, 14 living with HIV, taking their AZT. Unfortunately, a lot of them come from very poor families, and then they get imbalanced because the medication requires you to have a healthy, nutritious, balanced diet, which is not the case. So they often end up in the unit very severely sick, and we've had a few challenges. The unit is for 25 children at a time. We serve 3 to 4 kids each bed over the year, and each bed costs $10,000 to run for a year for at least 3 to 4 kids to benefit. Our kids, when they're admitted to this, it's a very specialized unit. The treatment to get them back to a stable level can take us up to 3 to 4 months, sometimes 6 months.
And so how many kids are you able to treat per year? And how much does it cost to support that program overall?
Well, like I said, we are able to support at least 3 to 4 kids per bed with everything, meaning medical, 24-hour nursing, medical labs, psychologists, social workers. I mean, it's a holistic approach. And each bed costs us $10,000 a year.
And so how are you able to finance that program?
Well, then? I have to tell you that I forgot to say our partners in this intensive treatment unit is the Caris Foundation. So we honored the Caris Foundation by calling that unit the Caris Foundation Intensive Treatment Unit. They're our primary partner, and they not only provide us with the expertise, they also provide us with the antiviral medication, and they also provide us with the follow-up. Once the child leaves the unit, and the Caris Foundation often follows the child during their time in their community as well. The kids come from all over the country. We do not recruit the children. They often are referrals from the Caris Foundation, which is our biggest funder as of today. We also created a sponsor a bed program. Each bed costs $10 to sponsor. And for those people who cannot afford to sponsor a complete bed, we created a program called Tree of Life. Buy a leaf and you can donate what you can, and your name is on that tree. That's how right now we're funding that intensive treatment unit.
So what do you think are the challenges, but also the objectives for the years to come for the health programs of FEJ?
Funding. We've run them so far. Like I said, the community clinic is run by grants from Germany, and our efforts in fundraising, as well as, you know, grant from the CARES Foundation for the intensive treatment unit and the sponsorship program. And unfortunately, we have not yet been able to tell you the HIV unit, you know, the intensive unit is only 2 years old. So we are trying to work on looking at strategic ways of getting grants. I know their global health has a lot of funding for HIV, and we're hoping to be, you know, this is one of the reasons why I want to do this podcast. You have to know that FEG is on three decades, but three decades of everyone being hands-on. We have not really been visible globally in terms of, a lot of people don't know about FEG's work on ground, and this is one of the reasons I want to get the message out there, because we do need help. These programs of operating, and we could do so much more if we had much more support.
And so do you have any last words for the audience? And could you also share with them how they can support FEJ's health programs?
Well, my message to those who are watching this podcast, health, without health, one has nothing. And these two entities that FEJ have created has allowed so many young children to be saved, their lives transformed, and a pathway to a better life. So my appeal is, please support these programs, support this unit for the intensive treatment unit for these children that are would die if this unit would not exist, as well as in a rural community. We are the only clinic that exists that provides services to the community. So I appeal to you, if you are a health professional wanting to give your time, volunteer your time, whether it is in your country or on ground, but as well to promote these two interesting and valuable programs that are serving and making a tremendous difference in many people's lives.
Well, Gina, I'd like to thank you for sharing about the wonderful work that FEJ is doing on the ground in terms of health.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for your valuable questions.
Se vous m'en débilez, c'est vous.